everybody's tape. I respect that opinion, but sometimes nonviolent action is a necessary course in order for an issue to be brought to the public's attention. We politely marched and we politely tore up the tape for the same reasons thousands of people marched through Portland to protest the war in Iraq, because it was the right thing to do, and we're proud of the work we did and the 400 pounds of garbage and tape that we collected. In conclusion, I'd like to thank the mayor and commissioners for addressing this issue and to offer the reminder that whether we're dealing with tapers that are downtown business owners who want to sweep away the homeless, the sidewalks belong to everyone. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for being here.
Hope you come back and testify again. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. I don't think I ever felt that excited about testimony, but at least my heart has stopped bumping quite so loudly as it used to. Portland is participatory. We value public participation. We don't value tape on the ground, I don't think. So I support this ordinance, and I'm not able to stay for the next one regarding delay in implementation of the sit-lie ordinance. So I want to point out that both of these ordinances pertain to when and how people can use Portland's public sidewalks. And the outpouring of interest in taping of sidewalks, I hope that people who are talking about it will consider they're talking about spending a few hours on the sidewalk to watch a parade. So presumably they're affluent enough to be able to take time off work or away from their family lives to be able to sit and watch a parade. How is that different from people sitting on the sidewalk because they're exhausted and they have nowhere to go? How is that different from people who, children, teenagers who may have been abused at home and have nowhere to go and want to sit on our sidewalks? Where are all the people who want to sit on the sidewalks supposed to go when the facilities for them are not yet ready? So I support both of these ordinances. I would point out that the city funds the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to do community involvement. So suggesting that the Rose Festival would be in charge of it, of this process, doesn't match that, and the city should use the facilities, the structure, the volunteers who are already engaged in so many more ways. So that use, and if you did, then you could do it in far quicker than 6 months. If you used the long list that the Office of Neighborhood Involvement has of community organizations, if you use the Vision PDX projects work in identifying people who are not engaged, you could get the message out to those people, have the conversation in the community, have the discussion within your structure, and be done in 3 months. And I would suggest that that would be a good thing to do.
Thank you, folks.
You want the next three?
Please.
With Marion Haynes, Anthony Wehagi, and Jeff Miller.
And at the conclusion of these folks, I'm going to invite representatives from the Rose Festival to come up and speak.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Marion Haynes, and I represent the Portland Business Alliance. I'll be brief. Randy, we agree with you. I mean, this really hit a nerve, and I think it was surprising. But I've spent some time looking on the blogs and following the conversation that's been going on around this, and it's clear that people are very passionate about this on both sides of it. And so we're very supportive of having a community-based discussion and a dialogue about what we do with the Rose Festival and how we deal with the Grand Floor Parade and providing access to all the people that want to see it. And so we are very supportive of moving forward with developing a solution to that involves the community and allows that dialogue to occur. This is really a celebration of Portland, not just for Portlanders, and we need to make sure that we bring everybody together to come up with a solution that will really work for everybody and provide access to those that want to participate. Thanks.
Hello. My name is Anthony Wehage, and I just have a brief comment. Good morning, gentlemen. Afternoon. I lived in this wonderful city my entire life, and I've seen it evolve over the years. Some things I liked and some things I didn't. But what I have seen in this city is its pursuit of fairness. And to be honest, gentlemen, the practice of claiming public property as one's own with tape is not fair. The citizens have been tolerant for years, but this year, the entire parade route was taped off. And in that case, those people who got up early, got the kids ready and came down to stand behind those, had to stand behind those who taped their spot 2 to 3 days earlier and come down to watch whenever they felt like it. My father was fair. He waited until they closed the street, drove his truck and parked backwards, and my family and I enjoyed a great Portland Institute. Not more than 2 blocks away from here. We never left garbage. And I think a rewarding view of the parade is deserving to those who put forth the effort of getting up early to claim their rightful spot, not those lazy people with no regard for others. Ban tape markings for the good of the city, if only for its reputation for fairness. Thank you.
Jeff Miller, the president of the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association. We had the great opportunity to have 46 meeting planners here for the Starlight Parade on that weekend. It was a phenomenal showing for the city of Portland, and we have the opportunity to attract thousands and thousands of delegates. This is an iconic festival for Portland, and we need, obviously, to do some work on it. I would support the mayor's resolution that we take some time and decide as a community what is the best way to address this, as opposed to legislate first and then make the adjustments as need be. We're a community that has done a great job of collaborating, as was said earlier, for the PDC, on the budget, on the SAFE ordinance. We do a great job as a community, and I believe Jeff Curtis and his team can really bring this together and include Commissioner Leonard and others to find the right solution for this great event that allows us huge economic impact and a huge sense of spirit to the city of Portland.
Thank you, folks. Could the Rose Festival Association please come forward?
Mayor Park, Council, for the record, Jeff Curtis, I'm the Executive Director of the Portland Rose Festival Association. In our efforts, and I just want to start my comments that this issue shows what an amazing event we have in the fact that people coming together, how it resonates with our entire community and resonates with the visiting public from around the world. But in our efforts to provide the community with the top civic celebrations in the world over the past century, the Rose Festival has a long history of working with the city and city leaders to search for a successful solutions to both challenges for logistical reasons or financial reasons. And I want to share some examples of how my organization has done so. Most recently, we worked with PDOT and with the issue of safety and security of people coming down to Waterfront Park last year on NATO Parkway. We reached a solution that was safe and equitable for all. We've worked with Portland International Raceway to make that a safe racetrack and to attract world-class racing. We've worked with the Parks Bureau on both two projects. One is to development of a store at Washington Park that produces revenue for the city in a joint cooperation partnership. We've also worked with the Parks Bureau with NATO Parkway, specifically with Waterfront Park, to make that an event that's viable for our community, and we've invested money in that event as well. Our most recent and high-profile example that shows our partnership with the city has to do with parade trash. More than a decade ago, one city commissioner came and said there was an issue with all the parade trash after the parade route. As a direct result of that issue that came forward, the Portland Rose Festival Association, with the Maintenance Bureau, PGE, and Solve, created what is now known as a world-class parade cleanup program that's made us the cleanest and greenest festival in the country. And for the last 10 years, that has been known as the cleanest and greenest festival. That came out of a problem, and it was solved by my organization in cooperation with the city and other organizations to make that a solution that's a remarkable solution and very consistent with the city's efforts as a green and clean city. Speaking of the issue as it relates to public space, and I also want to mention that that program has saved the city thousands of dollars annually on cleanup, thanks to the thousands of volunteers that participate. But speaking to the issue as it relates to marking public space, this is actually not the first time it's come up. The city has wrestled with it before, and most recently, in fact, 9 years ago, it was a major issue. And what came out of that was that there'd be a clear time for folks to come out and mark their space. And what made that work, and I say work because it was the communication between the city leaders and bureaus and the Rose Festival Association and when it was okay for the public to mark their space. And so that's not a new, that happened 9 years ago. That practice has continued thus far.
So what was the rule that came out of that?
Basically, it was an understanding that Thursday people could start marking space, and it wasn't a city ordinance, but it was with the mayor's office at that time as well as with the bureaus involved. People could mark their space, correct me, Marilyn, at Thursday at midnight. That they could start
doing it 2 weeks before the parade. Now.
That's correct.
So how is the rule working?
Can't answer that right now.
That's a rhetorical question. I mean, it doesn't appear to be working.
This public is really, the City of Portland and the Rose Festival Association will continue to work hard on communicating that. We can't control all the needs of our citizens, but we will certainly work to address that in the future. And that's what this point that we're out to make is this task force will address that in a meaningful way. I want to also talk briefly about how we've made an investment in this year's centennial celebration, a significant celebration to our community. What a great public event we have. In the city, I want to thank you, Randy Leonard, and the city for supporting that and certainly providing extra resources to make that happen because we put on a great festival. But I have to tell you that we were taken by surprise by this emergency ordinance within days of our largest public event. We are disappointed to have this issue become the focus of the media attention and potentially detract from the years of planning of our efforts to make this the best parade we've ever produced. Since 1907, the Rose Festival has been designed to unite the citizens of a larger community, not divide them, as well as welcome guests from around the region and the world. A parade that's been called the best we've ever produced really doesn't deserve over a controversy about duct tape. We also concerned about providing safety amongst our parade route, and that's something we're always mindful of. And what happened on Friday night certainly concerned my organization with the issue of removing duct tape among the route. With no advance warning to people who with the traditional aspects of Rose Festival who did come out there and reserve their space. We don't condone the issue of duct tape. It's the fact that those folks didn't receive warning in due process that this was going to take place. So on behalf of the Board of Directors, staff of the Rose Festival, in cooperation with POVA and the Business Alliance, we support Mayor Potter's proposed resolution that allows more time to study this, to collect valuable information, not just here in Portland, but from around the world. How do they handle this issue? Working with colleagues of event producers from across the United States and the world, and certainly work with our visiting, with our constituents amongst the public, and also a voice that doesn't get heard much, our parade viewers, people that come to the parade every year. They also deserve a valuable voice in this, and we want to open that process up and certainly resolve this issue. The point being is the issue of reserving space along the route of the Grand Full Parade, if it is a problem with the City of Portland, which is why it's in front of us today, the Rose Festival Association, as always, as I've showed examples to you before, will like to be part of the solution, and we can lead that process to make a solution that's fair and equitable to our entire community.
Jeff, would you be willing, or someone from your organization willing, to co-chair such an effort with Commissioner Leonard, who has a reputation for getting things done?
Yes, we would.
Okay. And how long do you think such an effort would take?
Well, I would like to stick with the mayor's recommendation of up to 6 months to really go through a good, thorough process. What I would not like to happen is have go to steamroll this too fast without a fair process to all, and I think that'll take 6 months.
Okay. Thank you.
So once again, to conclude, we want a resolution to this. We want a fair resolution to this. We respect the commissioner's position, but this ordinance, as an emergency, is too fast for the purpose of making a fair and reasonable decision for the future.
And would you be willing to have this referred back to your office to conduct the 6 months co-chaired by you and the Rose Festival?
Absolutely. But I want to clarify something because I don't want there to be a misunderstanding that you might think that this was some pre-planned kind of ordinance. It wasn't. I was on the Bob Miller radio show a week ago Monday. He asked me about this practice. I gave him my opinion. He said, "Are you going to do anything about it?" I said, "No, I'm not." A Channel 2 news reporter heard that interview and called me and said, "I'd like to come talk to you about it." So she came in, the end of her interview, she said, are you going to introduce anything about this year? And I said, no, I'm not. When her story aired last Tuesday night, the onslaught with me began. I began, and I appreciate your perspective, Jeff, but I don't think you've captured exactly how people feel about this. And I can't speak definitively about a lot of things, but I can speak definitively about how Portlanders feel about taping at this point in my career. And I got reports of violence, of intimidation. I got reports of children crying and leaving the parade. And I made the judgment last Tuesday that that's not appropriate. And I appreciate your role. I mean, your role is to conduct the parade, and I respect that. And I actually disagree with your suggestion that somehow the attention diminished the parade. I think it made it better. I think it sent a message to Portlanders that this is your community, this is your parade, and the bigger community. And if you want to come see it, you're not going to be run off by somebody who 2 weeks before that taped off a spot. That is the clear message I got back. I thought it was one of the most, frankly, healthy discussions I've seen in Portland in my lifetime. And I also had reports back from me, because I was obviously very concerned that some of the activities that grew out of that could lead to a confrontation, which is exactly the opposite of what I was trying to have not happen. And I got reports back from people who went to the parade who told me over and over, it was the politest the crowd has ever been. They had no reports of confrontations. There was no giddy out of my spots. There was no shoving that had been fairly routine, as I understand it, and you're probably more aware of that stuff than I am. I didn't know any of this stuff until I did the interview with Channel 2. So I apologize if there was any misunderstanding, but my goal here first is the security and safety of the citizens of Portland. And I respect what the Rose Festival does, but that comes second to that.
Would you, Mayor, be willing to withdraw your substitute if we send this back to Commissioner Leonard's office with the legislative direction to undergo the 6-month process? His ordinance would not be enacted until, or his ordinance would not take effect. We'd have the city community process. Would you be willing to withdraw your substitute?
I mean, if Commissioner Leonard pulled the ordinance.
Yes.
As opposed to holding it in abeyance.
I'll send it back to my office with the direction. Jeff and I will sit down. We'll come up with a list of people to participate that's balanced. And I am convinced. I think we can do it in 3 months. If it takes 6 months, that's fine, too.
Okay.
But we'll sit and come back and have a resolution that's a consensus-based resolution.
Does that require a council action?
Well, you could just move to refer it back to Commissioner Leonard.
Oh. We have to ask you a second. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm basically okay. I guess, you know, I do want some ground rules here. Commissioner Leonard, you're a strong personality. When you take an issue and you take a position, you argue it forcefully. And, you know, sometimes you override other people and who are maybe not as forceful. And I guess I'm looking for a commitment from you to be respectful to the Rose Festival Association, to any diverse points of view, because you've already stated where you want to be. So I'm looking for a commitment to be truly fair, and I'm also looking for a commitment. You know, I really did not like, and I know you've apologized publicly, but I did not appreciate the stereotypical slurs about people from Vancouver, people from Gresham.
I didn't say that.
Well, I'm just saying,
if you're going to say that, be
accurate. Just be no words that say those. Get the word those out of any future references. Those people, those suburbanites.
I didn't say those people, and I didn't say those suburbanites, so read the paper to be clear what I said. And I appreciate, especially coming from you, your admonition that I try to be open-minded.
I'm saying,
okay, folks,
not open-minded, just not to be appreciative of other people's points of view.
Well, I don't think I need a lesson on how to process problems. I've been pretty successful at that, and my intent is to do what I said I'd do. I may be strong-willed, but I'm also honest. I said I would have a collaborative process. And I said I would involve people in the community, and I said it will be a consensus, and it will.
So you've had.
We also said they would be jointly chaired.
Right.
Right.
So that you would be co-equals in that sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we have agreement. Does it take a legislative action?
I think just a direction from council.
I'm making that commitment. I mean, you can pass something if you want, but I'm promising to do that.
You can move to refer it back to Commissioner Leonard's office.
Do we vote on that, or just we do vote on that?
Unless there's no objection, in which the mayor can just order it.
Just order it.
Yeah, so ordered. And what I would like is to have is to have a something brought back to council to show the composition of the of this committee and its charge and approximate timelines.
And I would, since we're not voting, right?
Yeah.
At this point, I would like to say that I think some of the ideas suggested by Steve Buckstein about possibility of official Rose Festival tape to be used to tape off certain areas of the route and be a fundraiser for the Rose Festival or for, in fact, maybe some children's charities or something like that. I think that's
you can bring your ideas to the committee.
So I want to say, now that we've moved forward the great duct tape controversy to some problem solving, I think everyone on the council would join me in saying that this centennial celebration fulfilled and exceeded all of our wishes in terms of, you know, taking a great festival and making it even greater, breathing new and different life into it. And I know you've got lots of plans to build on the huge success that you had this year to continue the success and more success in the future. And I was able to attend a lot of events, and it was a lot of fun. And for those people who didn't attend or who, you know, don't attend the Rose Festival, this is not your grandma's Rose Festival anymore.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good job. It was a good festival.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I really appreciated what the Rose Festival did and your willingness to participate. Appreciate Commissioner Leonard's bringing this issue forward.
Thank you.
So it's been redirected to Commissioner Leonard's office. That does mean you'll have to cancel your vacation, but other than that,
no problem.
Not on your life.
Where are we?
Okay. Let's see. Please read item 760.
Declare the Portland Police Bureau direct the Portland Police Bureau to delay enforcement of Portland City Code Section 14A.50.030 sidewalk obstructions until adequate day access facilities, public restrooms, and public benches are available for displaced persons.
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. There have been some misunderstandings about this ordinance that it's attempting to repeal or have a second bite at the apple of the original sidewalk obstruction ordinance that passed this council in May, and it is none of that. In many ways, it is a reaffirmation of what I think was, and I said at the time, and I'll repeat again, was a brilliant balance of various competing interests in order to tackle something that has evaded solutions in communities, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And that is, how do you have this balanced approach where you have the homeless that may be sitting, lying, sleeping, or otherwise living on the sidewalk with getting them reasonable alternatives, which would include, in this case, a day access center that allows people who are told that they can't be on the street to go somewhere, have a place to go, which includes showers, which I thought was a simple yet, and I think I even said at the time when the vote was on this, this is simple but brilliant in its simplicity. The showers, the public bathrooms that are recommended by the SAFE group, and the toilets, which I think are just a kind of a basic common sense thing, but somehow has evaded us. And then finally, for those who aren't interested in the day access center, adequate benches and places for people to sit. I just want to reemphasize how much I appreciate the balance that was struck with that deal. But as I've told many of my friends in the last few days, I would, if advising you on purchasing a car, I would suggest that you take cash. And I would suggest that when you hand over the cash for the car, that simultaneous with that, the keys are handed to you. Do not give the dealer the money and with the promise that he'll send the keys to you in the mail at some point in the future. It has to be a seamless transaction as a package. And my concern with this is that it has not been a seamless transaction, that this balance that was achieved and the brilliance of that is that all of this stuff came together in a package, and in my view, it has to be implemented as a package so that if we're enforcing the sidewalk obstruction ordinance, people at the moment that it's enforced are told there is a day access center over here, there's a day access center over there, there are public restrooms here, there are places to sit over there, have specific addresses. What concerns me is that in this interim period, and I think at some point we'll get there, but in this interim period, where do you expect the people that are being displaced to go to? That's a rhetorical question, the answer of which is across the Burnside Bridge to Brentwood, Abernathy neighborhood, or points east. It displaces the issue into another neighborhood. It is one of the reasons, for an example, I do not support the exclusion zone. It's the same reason. People who buy or sell drugs, people who are prostitutes, are excluded from neighborhoods because of those activities. Does anybody honestly think that a prostitute is going to quit prostituting because she can't be within a certain boundary? Or that a drug purchaser will not continue to purchase drugs if he can't do it within a, he or she can't do it within a specific boundary? So to me, these are very related issues, and I think I'm being consistent in my approach on these issues, and that is have reasonable alternatives. I'm a huge supporter, for an example, of treatment, and we have spent dollars from this council and given them to the county to provide drug and alcohol treatment for offenders. A lot of the folks we're talking about here are mentally ill, have substance abuse problems. I would like us to see us approach this as a package, implement it at one time, and the date at which the last nail is driven in the day access center and the date at which the last lock is unlocked at the last restroom and the date at which the last bench is erected for folks to sit on legally is the date at which we enforce the ordinance. It just strikes me as a fair and balanced thing to do. Thank you.
Did you have folks you'd like to have come and testify? I did.
Okay.
I'd like to have the oversight, if there are representatives of the oversight committee, and also I would like to have the police bureau, and I don't know beyond Captain Mike Reese. As you know, the ordinance went into effect Saturday.
Right.
So I'd like to get an update from the police bureau about how the ordinance is working and what the police bureau is doing to try to provide that balance, but also have the oversight committee provide you additional information.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Maria Rubio, Public Safety Policy Manager for the Mayor's Office. On May 2nd of this year, City Council empowered the Safe Oversight Committee to monitor and oversee the implementation of the Street Access for Everyone initiative. Council had previously agreed that the city would not move forward with a safe ordinance until the Safe Oversight Committee certified that services and infrastructure were moving forward enough to begin enforcement. The co-chairs of the Safe Oversight Committee sent a letter to all of the members of Council on May 2nd, certifying that enforcement could begin. In keeping with that commitment made by City Council, we would like to allow the Safe Oversight Committee to continue its work. In terms of implementation of the ordinance will be implemented in two phases. Phase one took effect on Saturday, June 9th, and will run for 4 weeks, during which time police will only be educating about the ordinance, referring to services, and issuing warnings. No written warnings have been issued to date, and Commander Reese will update us on that. Phase two will take effect on July 9th, at which time full implementation to include issuance of citations as needed, in addition to educating, referring to services, and warnings. The Mayor's Office continues to be committed to the work of the Oversight Committee and to keeping everyone at the table to help implement and monitor this collaboration. I'm personally impressed with the commitment and the dedication of all of the committee members that continue to come on a regular basis to work together as we continue to build trust, because actually at the end of the day, that's really what's happening here, is that we are building trust between the community and our city government. And to me, that's an unintended consequence, or maybe intended, in the long run. But we have continued to learn from each other. Both sides of the table have made concessions. We've been learning from each other. Much learning has occurred on both sides of the issue and at many levels. At this point, and I'll be happy to give you an update of where we are in terms of the facilities. Number one, the day center facilities. The Julia Westhouse is the day access center that we are contracting with, and they are estimating that they are serving between 120 and 150 people daily. They're open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday from 8 a.m. till 4 p.m., and on Thursdays from 8 a.m. till 11 p.m. The hours of operation continue to expand. The total hourly number of clients served are more than 50, have been more than 50, at least 23 times since service began. And in May, they served up to 70 people per hour at three times. With the installation of a new hot water heater, they will be able to provide showers beginning at 6 a.m. Monday through Friday, and we hope to have that done by July 1st. This was a need that the homeless community identified as important to their being able to go out and look for work. In terms of the benches, we have six new benches that have been installed for quite some time now. On Tuesday, we identified 22 other locations to install 25 additional benches, and that will happen within the next 4 to 6 weeks. In terms of restrooms,
sorry, Maria,
go ahead.
Did you say 25 additional benches?
Yes, we have ordered 25 additional benches. We have located venues to install them for 22 this week. In terms of restrooms, three restrooms at two separate locations downtown have been reopened. One at Southwest Fourth and Clay. $20,000 have been spent on that particular venue on upgrades to make it safer and to increase the capacity. On Southwest 8th and Ankeny, we have two restrooms that have been refurbished and two others that are in the process of being refurbished. We've spent $53,000 on those so far.
You said they're open?
Two of them are open now. We did have four of them open during during Rose Festival, but we've closed down two of them to continue refurbishing them to bring them up to the same condition as the others. The hours have been extended until 11 p.m. year-round on all eight downtown parks restrooms. And signage will be placed at 11 locations and 250 window signs that currently say no public restrooms. What we're going to say is we're going to give them the location of the nearest public restroom, and we hope to get those up within the next 4 to 6 weeks. In terms of code enforcement, I've already mentioned that it took effect on June 9th. I would like to turn it over to Commander Reese to give us an update about how that's going.
Okay, thank you. I'm Mike Reese, Commander of Central Precinct, and I'll be very brief. In May, we had our training for officers, and we brought together our neighborhood response team officers, our bicycle officers assigned to PPI, and Mounted Patrol Unit, who are the primary users of these types of tools. As part of the training, we had Deputy DA present, a city attorney, Mark Jolin with JOIN, and two homeless advocates from Sisters of the Road, and myself. And we presented the training component to our officers, and I included Mark and our folks from Sisters of the Road so that they could pass on their message to our officers from their constituency's point of view, but also so that our training component was transparent to everybody that has been involved in the SAFE process. As Maria said, the ordinance went into effect on June 9th. We are verbally warning people of the behavior that could get them into trouble with the ordinance. We are not citing or issuing written warnings at this time. We're going to do this process of education for about 30 days. And then the Oversight Committee, of course, meets on a very regular basis and discusses these issues. The Oversight Committee will get copies of all the written warnings and any citations that are issued after July 9th. In addition to that, This is a very collaborative group of people. As Maria said, we've had a lot of give and take on it. There are advocates of all of the constituencies present. I am certain that if there is a breakdown in one of the, whether it's the day access center or something, the restrooms or the benches, someone on that committee will bring it forward as an issue and we will address it.
So can I ask a question, Commander Reese?
Certainly.
So you're issuing warnings currently that will be, and what do the warnings say?
Right now, officers are providing a verbal warning to people, telling them if they come across someone whose behavior would get them a written warning.
So they're sitting on the sidewalk in violation.
On the sidewalk, or we have people who sometimes spread blankets out around Pioneer Courthouse Square and sell products, things of that nature. We walk up to them and say there's an ordinance in effect that would prohibit this behavior. I'd like you to move. We have a day access center, the Julia West House at 13th and Alder that you can go to. There are appropriate seating. As part of the siting, they did a survey of the seating already available in downtown, and there is substantial benches already present. We direct people that they can sit there. They can also go to our parks. As part of our process, we got Street Roots to provide us with a resource guide. Those came in this week, and officers are distributing those out as well. And that provides a list of services to people in the homeless community.
So the day access center currently is the Julia West House.
Yes.
And that houses how many people?
Well, as Maria said, they've gone up to 50-plus people at any given time. Gone up there and talked to them about it, they see probably 70 to 120, 130 people on any given day. I think part of it is whether the weather's inclement, things of that nature.
And so we've agreed as part of the SAFE group's recommendations to have a second day access center.
Well, I think the oversight committee is looking at pushing the city into a permanent day access center and putting our efforts towards that. It has been very problematic finding a location for a second day access center.
I understand that. So how many people will that occupy?
I would hope that it would hold up to 150 as well.
So I think the number is 170, isn't it? Over the length of the time that it's open, not at any given time.
The permanent one, or
the temporary one.
Oh, yeah, it serves up. Actually, they indicated that it serves up to 150 people per day.
You're not talking
or
about
they have served
the Julia West House.
Yes,
that the Julia West House serves up to 150 people a day.
It can. Those are individual numbers that they've counted. Mm-hmm. At any one time, they do hourly counts.
Yes.
And at any one time, they have 50 to 60 people in there.
Okay,
it's
that's
very
what
well used.
That's what I was getting at. So is the capacity 50 to 60, but they happen to serve up to 150 people a day?
I would say their capacity is about 50 to 70.
I'm just trying to understand the logistics of how many people we're talking about here. So the proposed new day access center would hold up to 170 people at one time.
No, I was speaking, I thought, of Julia West. I thought that was their maximum capacity.
But I was asking about the proposed one.
The proposed. It's consistent with, it was in the 10-year plan to end homelessness, and it's the same criteria, which I don't really have available right now, that is in the plan. That is what they're going to put into the permanent day center.
Do we have a number of how many people were thinking that would hold?
I don't.
Is it something more than the Julia West House?
Do you guys know?
I'm Monica Garacki, co-chair of the committee, and I will try to speak to this point. And then I have some other stuff I'd like to say. But the original SAFE recommendations called for a day access center plan. It has several components, including suggestion that more space be found for adults, more space be found for young people, and certain types of services be available for that space. The number that we picked as what we thought seemed adequate was space for up to 150 people. That's what it says, 150 people. I mean, just like the rest of the document, you know, as a lawyer, I might have wanted to make it more precise, but we were trying to put together a plan and a set of recommendations. In the process of implementing the SAFE work group's recommendations, we looked and we meaning the oversight committee members and members of other city bureaus and offices, made a big effort to look for space, whether existing or new space, that could fulfill the day access center plan. The first thing that we came up with was the Julia West House. They stepped up. They said, with some additional resources, we could expand our hours. These are the types of services that we provide. So our thought was, let's have the Julia West House. And since, you know, we think there should still be more capacity, let's look for a second place, a second day access center. We had an organization that was ready to provide that service. They just didn't have a location. We looked for a location. That proved impossible at the time due to, you know, the political nature of having a day access center in a neighborhood. I mean, it's not an easy thing to just open one. We, in this process, you know, there were tons of discussions. One thing that we did was we went and met with folks at Sisters of the Road to talk about the different options. And the feedback that I heard at that meeting from people who live outside and are homeless or have experience of homelessness was that rather than a large space where they could just go and sit, what they really needed was services such as showers, lockers, restrooms, and they needed those, you know, today. Like, they needed to have them right away so they could go out and look for work or take work that had been offered to them. And so we talked about that. We brought that back to the committee. The committee said, that sounds like a good idea. We've got Julia West House. Rather than look for a second place, maybe we should consider getting these services up and running. And you and we brought that to you as council, and you all, and we actually put that in a letter, and we brought that to you, and you all, as I understood it, gave your approval to that approach. We currently have an RFP out for all those services. As much as I would wish that we had the services right now today, I also think it's overall fair and the best thing to do to put it out in an RFP so that we're getting the best service we can for individuals. Then on a parallel track is the permanent day access center. I believe Commissioner Sten is sort of spearheading that planning process, and that was already part of the 10-year plan. I don't have information right now on how many people that will serve, but my understanding is that it's at least 2 years out from being actually implemented. So I see that as a parallel track, but it's not something that we are right now putting within our group. So I hope that answers the questions.
Well, I want to be really clear. I'm not really, the purpose of this ordinance and the purpose of this discussion from my perspective is not to second-guess the policy decisions you all have made. As I've said, I think those are excellent. This is, from my viewpoint, this is a logistical discussion, and only that. And the reason I was asking Commander Reese about what is happening currently with the police and the homeless folks on the street and want to get an idea about these numbers is because, I mean, I would hope we could all agree, even if we don't agree that we should delay the implementation, we would all agree that in this interim period until those things that you want done are done, the effect on the people who are being displaced is not what you ultimately want to have happen. I mean, you don't want people to show up to the Julia West House and have there be no room for them. You don't want them to show up to take a shower and there's no showers, and you don't want them to end up having to have these issues without having a bathroom that will be done, and you don't want them to be displaced and not have the benches in. I mean, I think we all agree on that. But what has happened here is we have, on the one side, agreed with one part of the community that wants the ordinance enforced, while the other side of the community has had promises to have these things done, but they're not done. And I'm sorry, I come from a bargaining background, and I'm not familiar with deals where both sides don't consummate their end of the deal simultaneously. And I just, from a logistical point of view, I have to ask, where did you think these folks would go when the police were enforcing the ordinance if all these services weren't available? I mean, I know what the answer is. I mean, I think Commander Reese knows what the answer is. They move somewhere else. They don't get into the services you want because they're not done yet. That's my only point in trying to get us all to agree as kind of a logistical strategy that we not implement the enforcement piece until all the pieces that you want and have been agreed to are in place.
The Oversight Committee reached a level in their work that they felt that they had enough services out there to authorize us to enforce the ordinance. And I guess I just keep going back to the fact that we authorized the Oversight Committee to make those decisions. And
I want to reiterate, the council voted with that in mind. It was in the information presented in your letter. It was discussed, and we voted to have the ordinance go into effect on June 9th.
But it was not, I will tell you from my perspective, it was not clear that all of the elements were not going to be in place on June 9th. And I'm not even saying 100% completion, but even reasonably all the basic elements are not in place.
The basic elements are.
Well, they aren't. Their bathrooms aren't open 24 hours a day. A day access center isn't available every day. The capacity isn't what it needs to be. The seats are 4 to 6 weeks away from being done. I mean, what I'm saying is, I bet you today if this passes and the community knows you're not going to enforce the ordinance until at least the seats are done, they'll be done by the end of the week, not 4 to 6 weeks. And that's my point here, is we have to create incentives to get these things done. And right now, with all due respect, my friends in the advocacy community has lost their hammer because they've agreed to one half of the equation without getting the follow-through on the other.
So if I could ask about we sort of gave administrative, what we would call in the bureaucracy, I think, administrative authority to the Oversight Committee to make this decision for us, and or to make this decision implementation, I think, is my impression of our earlier action. Monica, you are co-chair of that committee. Was this a close vote? Was this controversial? Did this raise a lot of concerns, or was there a reasonable amount of unanimity on the committee to move forward with enforcement?
And you're talking about the decision that we made back in the beginning of May, or whatever the date was, to recommend to you to go ahead with enforcement?
Correct.
I would say it was fairly contentious, and as just about everything, you know, in this process has been. I guess my understanding of the way that this process has been moving forward, and really my understanding of the only way that it can work, is through a series of incremental steps and changes and good faith efforts on the part of everybody involved. And I really believe that we have been working in good faith. I think everybody, not dependent on where you come down on whether we should have an ordinance or not, believes that the parties have been working in good faith. And part of this this whole discussion relates to whether there should be an ordinance or not, and whether there should be an ordinance tied to services or not.
I don't think that's what Commissioner Leonard's point is. He's spoken for himself. He's not debating the underlying issue. He's debating whether there are enough services in place to merit implementing the ordinance. Could you speak, if nothing else, your own point of view? If I assume that you were one of the votes to move forward with enforcement?
Yes.
Okay, could you just speak from your own point of view why you felt that there were enough services in place to move forward, just so that I benefit from your thinking process?
Okay. From my perspective, we had, as I understood it, reopened several bathrooms downtown. I know that there's a restroom subcommittee that's working on new restrooms, and those aren't going to come online until quite a bit later. But there are extended hours at restrooms in the downtown area, and there are these newly refurbished restrooms.
So you felt that there are enough new restroom facilities. That's one area. What are some other areas?
The other I failed to mention is with the extended hours at Julia West House. That's another restroom that's available to people that wasn't before.
Any of the other service components that are you feel are well underway or underway enough in terms of their operations to, was that part of your thinking? Are there any other components?
I felt that the day access facilities at the Julia West House were doing a great job. My sense is that it's being well used, but I don't, and maybe other people can speak to this, I don't believe people are being turned away, and I don't believe there's, numbers of people that are sitting on the streets currently that are going to be displaced into other neighborhoods. I just frankly don't think there are that many people, and I think that with the existing benches that we have, the ones that have already been put in and the ones that are going to be put in, we're going to get to a place where everyone will be able to sit very close to where they would have been sitting on the sidewalk. So those are the reasons that I thought it was fair to move forward. And the point was made that, while all this progress had been made on the services, the ordinance was languishing. Like Maria said, actually, this process has been about building trust and relationships. And historically, very few of the parties have trusted each other in this process. And I saw it as our commitment that we should stick to move forward all pieces of the ordinance incrementally. I anticipated that we would have a phase-in period, as we have. I hear that some of the recommendations need more implementation. I understand those concerns, and that's why I thought the phase-in education period was really important, and I supported that.
So if I could ask Maria a question.
Yes.
Maria, is it having, as a staffer and as a commissioner in charge of bureaus directly, I know that we give authorization or you get authorization to move forward, and in transportation, there's a period of like preliminary engineering of sort of figuring out how to figure out the implementation for the rest of the project. Are you at a point as your team and as the committee at a point where you could put together a work plan and a timeline when you think everything will be delivered? Do you have enough information on sort of what it will take to implement all the various pieces that you could give us a timeline for which we could take some comfort in of when this stuff is supposed to get done?
I believe so. I think that we discussed this extensively at the meetings, and I would say that, and I would have to defer to Kyle Chizik, who's actually staffing the Oversight Committee now, but I would think that by mid-July to early June, we would have everything in place.
What do you guys think?
Early June.
I'm sorry, mid-July to early August.
Oh, okay.
Can I add something briefly? My name's Mark Jolin. I'm a member of the Oversight Committee, and I work for JOIN. And I can't put words in Monica's mouth, but for those of us on the committee who are working with folks on the street or advocating for them, I think it's important to sort of recognize that no one is saying that three bathrooms is adequate for anything in terms of the needs of people who are living on the street. And 150 day spaces isn't going to be adequate. And we've got 2,000 people a night who are outside in this town. And so, I think, and I absolutely respect where Commissioner Leonard is coming from in terms of his concerns around where people are going to go. But part of what I was sort of saying in my testimony before you a month ago is that the sit-lie ordinance is just one piece. I mean, it is going to displace people off the sidewalk to benches, to the parks, onto to the railings, and if they're waiting for services, they're accepted. The bigger issue around where are people going to go comes from an overlap of various ordinances, like the camping ordinance, the park exclusion ordinances, public urination ordinance, and trespass ordinances, coupled with enforcement strategies. Because, there are lots of ordinances on the books that can make it very uncomfortable for homeless people to be downtown or in any other neighborhood. And so from my perspective, and I was not on the safe work group that sort of signed off on this deal, and I think it's important to note that it wasn't the oversight committee that sort of signed off on the deal that came before you. It went out to the whole work group and was adopted by them. But I think what the opportunity that's here and is to not just affect a change in this one ordinance or that there are three bathrooms or 15 or 20 benches, but in the whole way that we work with people who are on the street downtown. And as I understand the commitment that's being made, it's yes to benches and bathrooms and day spaces that we need, but it is a commitment from the police and from the Business Alliance to not take strategies that push people out, that make them unwelcome downtown. And that commitment thus far hasn't been tested in a sense. I mean, so far they've participated in these meetings. They have been good to their word in terms of putting money on the table, having a transparent process. And the next stage of this is the ordinance going into effect and seeing how it goes, and are they willing to engage us as advocates and providers around the bigger questions that are out there around what do we do with camping? What do we do with park exclusions? How are we going to engage people who don't have anywhere else to go? That is absolutely right. But it's not that they don't have somewhere else to go because we have a sit-lie ordinance. It's that they don't have someplace else to go because we don't have adequate services across the board to support them in making permanent transitions off the street. And our challenge, the big challenge, it seems to me, as a community, is to engage that process and keep the Portland Business Alliance and the Portland Police and all of the other folks who have been at the table in the SAFE process engaged in that dialogue and trying to make change at that level.
But the devil is in the details. I hope you would agree with that. You're talking about broad-ranging approaches that are very important. I very much agree with you. But it would just seem to me that if you don't totally agree with my approach of having them all done, and I can understand why a reasonable person might disagree with my approach, why wouldn't you at least say you have all the 25 benches, at least have the 25 benches installed before you enforce the ordinance? I mean, you're 6 weeks away from having them installed. What is the hurry? Why can't, we're not talking about years. You're 6 weeks away before the bench. At least you could say, hey, folks, we have 28 benches in the downtown core. You can't sit here, but here are the addresses of those. Why wouldn't you do that?
Commissioner Leonard, I don't disagree with you at all on that. I mean, there are pieces that could have gone quicker, that I certainly would have liked to see go quicker.
I'm not even saying go quicker. Time the enforcement with whatever the timeline is to install. I'm not saying do it next week. I'm saying, why wouldn't you agree to say, well, okay, the bathrooms are going to be difficult. There's some permitting issues there. The daycare center is a siting issue. We're working through that. But come on, at least we can get the 25 benches installed before we enforce the ordinance.
And let me just try to answer that from my perspective, because it's really what I wanted to say in my testimony, which is, of course, if council wants to do that, you can. I just think it's very important that if you do, you don't do it because there's a perception out there that the police or the PBA or anyone else who's been at the table in this has not honored their commitments.
This is not about you or the police. This is about the people that are having the ordinance enforced.
I understand
that.
And
it keeps coming back to, we did this, we agreed that. I appreciate that. That's not what this discussion's about. It's not about you or me or the mayor or Commissioner Sten and all of our intentions to improve. It's about treating people fairly. And I'm sorry if people feel like their toes have been stepped on, but my concern is the people in the street. Why wouldn't you at least say, have the benches done? Can we agree to that? Have the benches done, and then we'll enforce the ordinance. And it's not about questioning the PBA's integrity or the police or the mayor's office process. It's not about that. It's about a common sense kind of agreement that you get something for something. And it happened. Not a promise that it happened, but it actually happened.
Certainly, this is about folks who are on the street and what their needs are. And I think with all due respect, the issue of what the SAFE Committee has done has been framed to some extent in the public dialogue around whether this project process has somehow been taken over by the Portland Business Alliance or has not been honored by the police, or that they're somehow running the show. And I think that is where that's the only distinction I want to draw. I mean, if this council, and certainly would it be better if we had 25 benches in place tomorrow or before this ordinance went into effect? From my perspective, yes. But again, if that's the decision, it shouldn't come from a place of believing that we haven't honored the Safe Work Group's agreement somehow by going forward with the ordinance now. Because my understanding of what the agreement was that came before you was that we had certain services already in place on that date when we came to you, and then there was a commitment, not a numerical commitment to additional benches or bathroom stalls being open before the ordinance goes into force, but that there was